Welcome to In Conversation with Heartlines, a show where we try and help you do what's right so that you can fix the things that are wrong. This week, we want to unpack the transformative power of empathy. I'm your host, Andile Maphosa.
A values-based life starts here.
To get us started today, have you ever walked into a room and felt people had already made judgments about you based on your age, accent, skin color, or gender? How did that make you feel? While you're thinking about that, let's flip it around a little bit. Have you ever made judgments about someone because of their name, their age, their gender, or skin color? How do you think your assumptions would make the other person feel? At Heartlines, we believe that a lot of the misunderstandings we face with others on a daily basis can be overcome, and we believe that empathy is the constant that can bring about a change and bridge the divides that separate us. To help me with this conversation and unpack how we can better connect with other people, I have three guests with me in studio, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
Good day, everybody. My name is Marisha Singh Naika, and I am a Heartlines rep. I am also a relationship and family therapist and a local pastor. It's wonderful to be here.
Hi, my name is Simone Greger, and I'm the What's Your Story program manager, and it's an honor to be here today.
And last but not least.
Hi there, my name is Wesley van Graan. I am a Heartlines community mobilizer and representative. I'm also a leadership trainer involved in training leaders and also a pastor.
Let's just get straight into this. As we kicked off, I asked the question, have you ever walked into a room and felt people had made judgments about you before you've even said anything? Let's kick off with you, Marisha. Has that happened to you?
Yes, it has. As a female, it's seen that I cannot be a pastor or senior faith leader. So it's surprising sometimes when I am in certain circles, when I walk into the room, they are expecting maybe for me to be the admin or support person and not really the facilitator or the pastor that's going to preach.
How did that make you feel?
Very frustrated. Initially, when it happens, you know, you are angry. And then I think just disappointed and despondent by people in those circumstances. I think over time, you kind of get used to it. But definitely it is frustrating.
I can imagine. Pastor Wesley, has this happened to you before?
I've just turned 60, so I've had 60 years of quite an experience. And growing up in the South African context, especially, you know, during the 80s and the 90s, when you came out of that, going into spaces, especially based on the color of your skin, you know, I've had opportunities where my staff introduce the director, and because I'm sitting next to a white guy, they all think he's going to get up to speak, and I was the director. And then to be able to challenge people and say, who of you thought that this guy was going to get up and speak? Also, an interesting thing is my accent. I grew up in the Cape Flats, but I speak English. So some people would say I have a more of an English accent than a Cape Flats accent. And I can flatten it if I need to. But I never ever grew up speaking like that. And then my wife is Afrikaans speaking. And her experience was that often she thought that people looked down on her because of the language that she spoke, even though she was of the same cultural group. Funny story, I'm a singer, but I was a provincial rugby player. And it was like, you know, you can't sing and be a rugby player. You know, I thought, but I can do both equally well. And yet you were looked down upon if you were a boy who could sing.
I can imagine. I actually never knew that you could sing, but now I know. Simone, how is your experience?
I'll share the example that came to mind first. When I lived in Joburg, there was this gent who used to walk around with a cane. So it was clear that he was blind. And you'd see him walking on the side of the road, and he was walking in the slow lane of the traffic in what was then known as William Nicol. And so I was concerned about him. So I picked him up in my car and I said, "So are you okay? Where do you want to go? Can I help you?" And he said, "Please, can you drop me at the Randburg taxi rank?" So I knew where that was, no problem. The problem was, or the challenge was, that I needed to drive into the taxi rank to make sure that I could drop him off safely because I needed to open the door for him. Wow. I think someone just thought that I was a white madam dropping my gardener off, like throwing him out in the taxi rank. And I got the biggest talking to from a man holding a panga because he was busy chopping meat. And he said, "How dare you just drive in here and just throw someone out of the car?" And I said, "Sir, That's not the story. This gent requested a lift to the taxi rank. I needed to drive in here so that I could open the door to let him out safely. But that said, I haven't had many experiences like that where someone totally had the wrong end of the stick. I think sometimes just people, because of your gender or the way you look, they underrate your intellectual capacity, or they think you are of a certain stance, etc. But yes, that's the story that comes to mind when you ask the question.
Your story nicely brings up this next portion of, if people just got to know one level deeper than the appearance, they would unlock a whole lot of stuff and do away with misunderstanding. So based on this, what is empathy? I'll swing that to you, Pastor Wes, and why is it a superpower that can help us, you know, deal with misunderstandings?
People sometimes don't understand the difference between empathy and sympathy, and we fall more naturally into the sympathy side of things, which is my perspective of what I assume and think that you are feeling. Sympathy is your friend's ice cream fell on the floor and you're like, oh, I'm so sorry your ice cream fell on the floor. You're more worried about the ice cream than about how your friend is feeling, who was just about to take a lick on an ice cream and it fell on the floor. Now that sounds like a really simple example, but expand that. Where empathy is, hey, how are you feeling about this ice cream that fell on the floor after you've just spent money on that? Because now you're focusing on the person, and empathy is to try and get to understand the other person's feelings, their points of view, or what their current situation is in. And so that you can actually respond to them from their point of view, not from your point of view.
Marisha, would you want to add anything onto that?
I think for us to also understand it as they are both feelings, sympathy and empathy, and they are both needed in different circumstances. However, if we think about a continuum of support and effort, you would say that sympathy has less support and effort from the person that's feeling that towards another. Like Wesley has said, that if that ice cream had fallen on the floor, you know, you'd sympathize, ach, shame, sorry. But empathy goes deeper with the support and effort. Like, that must be hard, you know, with moving more towards even compassion, so acting upon it. So those different feelings are moving more towards action, where empathy is really feeling deeply in action, and sympathy is just a passive way of feeling, if I can say it in that way.
Very comprehensive summaries. The only thing that I want to add, and it's kind of just reiterating what has been already said, but it's putting yourself in the shoes of the other person, whereas with sympathy, you'd just be observing.
What I'm hearing from everyone, empathy goes much deeper than sympathy goes, and empathy has a lot about the other person and how they're feeling. Pastor Wesley, did you want to add more?
Yeah, I always like to use examples, and examples of my own life, actually. So my parents got divorced when I was 17 years old, on my birthday, actually. And everybody was saying to me, friends, older people, I'm so sorry your parents are getting divorced. Oh, man, that's so sad that your parents are getting divorced. No one was asking me, how did I feel about it? So I couldn't be helped in processing what was going on, because no one was asking me the question, until a youth pastor sat down with me at a campfire and said, how are you feeling about your parents' divorce? First time, it was probably 6 months after they got divorced. And I said to them, to tell you the honest truth, I feel relieved, you know, and then started to talk about the fights that was going on at home and all of those kind of things. So it started to help me to talk about what I'm going through. When everybody said, I'm sorry about your parents getting divorced, my response was, I didn't feel I had the right to say anything. I couldn't respond to anything. And out of their questions, I could say, I'm not sure, who do I need to go and stay with now? That's what I'm struggling with. Do I stay with my mom or do I stay with my dad? And all of a sudden, I could start to talk about some of the things that was going on in my mind that I actually needed someone to help me with. And that show of empathy helped me. It gave me the opportunity to tell my story. And I think the more we get to understand the role that empathy plays for the other person and get to think about that, it's so much more helpful.
Thank you for sharing that. A lot of the work that all three of you do centers around listening to people's experiences, which is ultimately listening to people's stories. How has empathy played a role in how you help these people process some of the experiences that they have gone through? I think let's start with you, Simone, here.
I think to listen thoroughly is a big challenge. You need to be very present and you need to resolve in your heart that you are really there to listen with an open heart. And so sometimes when you hear people's stories, there's a natural urge to try and fix or give suggestions, or even if it's an uncomfortable story, to try and do things to resolve the discomfort that you're feeling internally. You know, and I think that's when people tend to throw a platitude at the speaker's way. But I think sometimes it's just sitting with people's stories and giving them space to speak and listening properly and just really digesting what they're saying and not always having a suitable wise word and really reflecting on what it is that they're actually telling you. Because I think if you're listening with your own agenda in mind, sometimes you just kind of dismiss what is actually being said. So I've had the privilege of learning at Heartlands, what are the words saying? What is the inflection saying? What are the pauses, etc.? Everything gives you clues on actually what someone's saying.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, empathy is something so vital to our storytelling and story listening. And many of the opportunities that we've been given in sitting in and listening to people share their stories has allowed us to see empathy as a spark towards their healing. I remember in one particular storytelling session, and it was at a peace building bridge that we were doing, and a gentleman got to share his story. And at the end of it, he said, "Had I not had this opportunity, I probably would have taken my life today." And just to show that because he had someone who truly listened to him, who was able to validate his experiences, who was able to say, "I'm listening, I'm here, let me know what's going on." And he said, you know, "This is what I need more of in my life." So empathy, in him feeling people empathized with him in such a profound way for him, or important way for him, he was able to say, "This was what was lacking." And it moved him from that isolated spot. So empathy is something I think, you know, so necessary. And it is lacking, I think, because we are so busy all the time. And like Simone is saying, you know, paying attention to those little interactions, to the behaviors, to how people are speaking, to what they are saying. If we really just took the time to really go deeper and ask the questions, "No, how are you really feeling?" Engage a little deeper, we're able to enter into the space of empathy that then allows for that spark of the healing process to take place. And I think we all definitely need that.
Marisha, you mentioned the listening aspect. I would want to ask you, how important is it for us to learn how to truly listen?
It's vital for our survival and it's vital for good and healthy relationships. It's hard for us to listen well or actively listen, which means that we listen with our whole selves. We are present with the person. They can feel it from us. They can see it in our body language. If we think about somebody when they're talking to us and you're like, "Yeah, I'm listening," but we're still busy looking at our phones, especially like in our families, with our kids, with our loved ones, and like, "Yes, I'm listening," but we're busy doing something else. So I truly believe this. If we people got the opportunity to truly be heard, to truly be listened to, we'd have so much more of our problems kind of resolved. So it's absolutely vital and important for us to truly and actively listen, because we often want to listen to like, "Okay, I'm going to think about what I'm saying next. You know, how am I going to come back and respond to what they are saying?" But listening just to understand, like, "Am I hearing you right? Or have I heard you?" But it's more like we listen and then we want to say what we want to say. And if we are able to truly do the act of listening, it would help us have more healthy relationships with each other.
Free relationship advice right there. Learn how to truly listen. Pastor Wesley, coming on to you and how empathy has played a role in the work that you do.
Marisha and I, we probably are the kind of professionals that people come to if they've got a problem sometimes, because they come to you for counseling. Now, that's where you have to use certain skills. But when we're talking about empathy, we're trying to get the everyday person in the everyday relationship to understand how they can show empathy. So that when their friend does have a situation, that they actually will come to them out of their natural relationship, because you've already built the trust. Here's someone who really listens to me. Whether it's a story of their joy or of a frustration of something exciting, you have already listened to them. So when they have something that they want to unburden themselves with, they feel you a safe person that they can go to. And I think creating that safe space of, I'm here to listen to you, I'm not going to judge you, you know, because people feel guilty about some of the stuff, even when they've messed up and they've got to confess. Now they've got to tell someone and they're going to judge me. I think the first step is to try and help them to feel it's okay to talk. It's okay. And even with your loved ones, I think as a father and as a parent, you know, to create that atmosphere that my kids will come and say, Dad, I messed up. And so it's really important that you don't judge, that someone who's feeling they're not going to be pushed away, they're going to actually be listened to. And then seeing them dropping off that burden as they start to talk about it, you can actually literally see someone start to kind of breathe again because of whatever's been keeping them down. But again, I want to emphasize the empathy doesn't start because someone's got a problem.
So does this mean that empathy is something that, one, we can acquire, and two, we can build on?
I've had to learn about empathy, my personality and who I am and all of those things and how you were raised. It wasn't in a very empathetic kind of environment. If you don't experience it, you don't know how to show it. So for me, a lot of that I had to learn, and I had to spend time reflecting on my own life and seeing who showed me empathy and how did that help me. And I think through our What's Your Story program that we do within Heartlines, it's one of the ways in which you get people to learn a little bit more about empathy. It's about, hey, I've got to listen to other people. But I think it's become more of a skill because we live in, as Marisha was saying, we're living in a busy world. People don't have time to sit and listen. Are you okay? Yeah, fine. And we want to move on. We can miss core center of relationships is by having authentic conversations about what's really going on in our lives. And we need to make space for that.
We've touched a lot about storytelling. We've used that word quite a bit. We've used the word listening. Now, if you're listening, it means someone is doing the talking. Marisha, how can we create a space where a person can feel comfortable enough to share with us whatever it is that they're going through?
I think that's very important for people to feel comfortable just to share, is creating a safe container. Well, let me say co-creating, because it's important to ask the person as well, what will be needed for you to feel safe to be able to share? And you do that together. And there are simple ways of doing that in creating or co-creating a safe container for storytelling or story listening. And an important one is making sure that the person knows that they share what they feel comfortable to share. So they don't need to feel like forced to share something. They don't need to feel like I have to. And for them to know that it is going to be a space where it's confidential. So people feel safe in that this person's going to hold this with me without, you know, broadcasting it. And also for them to know that they can own their story.
Simon, this may seem like a bit of a weird question, but when people are sharing their story, how will they know if they are sharing past a point that a person who's listening is comfortable with?
That is an interesting question. So if I can reflect your question back to you, just to make sure I understand. So I'm telling you a story, and I'm not sure, you know, how I have come to you. You might be going through a lot. You might have had a really rough night with your baby not sleeping. You might not have a lot of emotional capacity for other people's problems. And then I come to you and I might be doing what's called emotional dumping. Maybe I'm telling you about all my woes and you haven't really, really invited me to do that. And yet here I am. So is my understanding correct of the question that you're asking?
Let's use yours and then I will correct so that you understand what I meant.
Okay. So I have had this before where people might not know me super well. You know, it's different to a context where I'm having a deep conversation with a friend and I've invited them to tell me how they feel. Sometimes people struggle to discern when it's okay to share and when we have what's called oversharing. If you have something heavy on your heart and you want to unburden yourself and you're not sure about whether or not the person you're speaking to might be the right person to tell, maybe just a good thing is to ask, you know, I have something that I want to share. Is now the right time? How are you feeling emotionally? Do you have capacity to listen? Because it might be that I'm feeling very emotional and I need to get this thing off my chest. And then when I tell you, you're not in a good space to listen. And I think, wow, they did a really awful job at listening and I feel so unheard. Meanwhile, I haven't considered the listener's position. Aside from the more professional contexts that Wesley and Marisha find themselves in their work, in friendships, we also need to guard against that. We can't always be the person doing all the speaking and the talking in the friendship, especially if it is of a heavy nature. And I'm not saying don't share your troubles, but also consider the listener and their emotional capacity. I was at the launch for our other program, Fathers Matter. I was at the launch of the State of Fathers report recently. And a lot of the people said that we see men really flourishing when they have safe spaces to be vulnerable, when they get together with groups of other men and they can really talk about what's going on. And I think beyond just the one-on-one, it is also how can we seek out those spaces to be more vulnerable, to really listen to each other properly.
So I'll start with you, Pastor Wes, adding on to what Simone was speaking about.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is oversharing. That is the risk, but it's a risk we have to take as those who show empathy. Because we will draw some people who feel, he listened to me. And so every time they will come to you and just do the emotional dump. But we need to manage that. Otherwise, you're at the risk of, I'm not going to show empathy because I don't want this to happen to me. I don't want people to come to me all the time. And that's not the best way. You got to learn how to manage it. To stop showing empathy is not the answer because there's someone else who may need it. Sometimes I would have to say, and because this is normally not in a counseling situation, this is normally in a ad hoc friendship or someone that knows you, you need to be able to chat for a while and say, you know what, why don't we have a coffee next week again? And then let's talk a little bit further.
Wow. Marisha?
Simone, your tangent brought some really beautiful points, you know, especially the aspect of people needing safe spaces to feel vulnerable. People do sometimes emotionally dump on you because, you know, there's no other space that they know. I think an important part of the whole aspect of empathy is self-awareness. Being able to notice and recognize your own ways of managing your thoughts, your emotions, your behaviors, but then also noticing it in others and what is happening with them, because that will allow you, the more deeper you are able to do it for yourself, then you are deeper to reach out to others as well. But then not only do it for them, but then also share your skills and knowledge of how they regulate, or what Wesley is saying, manage the thoughts, feelings, emotions, and behaviors, that they too can learn that skill, which is just something that's called, you know, regulation. Because that becomes very important in the work of empathy. And I think Simone was also touching on some of this, that there has to also be boundaries, because what can happen with empathy is that we do hear so many stories and we give so much of ourselves that we do then sometimes experience secondary trauma or vicarious trauma for people who are doing this long-term professionally. And so in our day-to-day lives, even whether it's friends or family who keep seeking out our help, we also need to be able to notice when we are saying, okay, this is my limit, you know, and like Wesley is saying, gently say, please, can we meet for coffee? Or please, can we do it another time? So knowing what your boundaries are as well, so that you don't totally stop being empathetic, but that you know that this is what I can help with right now. This is how I can extend myself. But if I do extend myself, then it's going to do more harm than good. And so then you do put in a boundary in place. And so that self-awareness is key in learning about empathy, being empathetic to ourselves and then being empathetic to others as well.
You mentioned something I had wanted to ask, being empathetic to ourselves. so I can actually have empathy for myself. How does that work?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's the first step towards being empathetic towards others. And that simply works by acknowledging and recognizing our own emotions and feelings and naming it. You know, often we may be frustrated or irritated about something and we like have no idea why we are reacting in this way or why we are doing it in that way. But really unpacking that and finding out where's that coming from and saying, okay, I'm irritated or I'm, you know, angry because I'm disappointed or I feel that I was neglected or something like that. So in that way, you are going deeper into asking yourself, really, how am I feeling and why am I feeling this way? What has made me to feel this way? And you're able to validate your own emotions and say, okay, this is where it's coming from and this is why I'm reacting in this way. I think we also often made to feel guilty for the emotions that we feel and for the ways that we react to those emotions. And empathy means that we allow ourselves space or we allow ourselves to be forgiven for the ways in which we may have not been helpful in the way we reacted to things. Because when we are able to identify and recognize and validate our own emotions and feelings and behavior, then we can also recognize it in others, how they are feeling, and then empathize with them as well.
You can't pour from an empty cup becomes very key here. Pastor Wesley?
Yeah, I think that self-awareness and what Rishi said is so helpful. And so, yeah, I'm going to give another example. Having been born into apartheid and the unique South African context, how do I actually show empathy to those who were part of the oppressive system? Maybe not the government, but who had benefited from that. So how do I show empathy to another white person and I'm a person of color when that person doesn't show empathy towards my lived experience? Get over it. Apartheid's done. You know, move on. The lack of empathy. And now I've got to show empathy towards them in their whatever situation they're facing in. So I have to deal with my own feelings and thoughts about that, because that could cloud my ability to give real empathy so that I can help someone. And that's an example. But what about other situations where you had been on the receiving end, you've had to work through that. Now you're dealing with someone who's a perpetrator or has done something similar. And I think that self-awareness is so important. You show empathy in a better way. If you don't do that, then you're going to be struggling all the time. So it helps you to become a better person. So showing empathy to others means you show empathy to yourself, and that helps you to find healing and you to actually grow as a person and learn how to process certain things in your life in a positive way.
We do have a lot to unpack around the topic of empathy, but I think as we conclude, the world, like you guys say, moves fast around us. We hardly have time. How can I practically apply the listening and the asking aspect on a daily basis with the people I meet up with quite often, you know, your work colleagues, but also in instances where it's very easy for a simple misunderstanding to get out of hand? How can I use the skills that are linked with empathy to try and diffuse that when I don't have a lot of time to listen to a person's full story? Marisha?
I think is to co-create, even if it's short, quality moments with people. And so if you don't have the full time to listen to that full story, to be able to say to each other that I want to hear you, or if you have the space for that little time that I want to really listen and listen well. And if it's not the time to do it, then make a time to do it. But if you can, to go a little deeper, even if it's in that short moment, and have a quality time of engaging a little deeper and not just a simple, ah, shame, sorry, I hope it goes okay, but really engage in a second level of what do you need right now, or what would help you get through this? And if we can't talk about it now, then let's set a time, or let me see how I could help at another time. You know, moving from just the superficial and moving towards a space of caring a little bit more, making a little bit more effort, and offering a little bit more support in that short space of time. So it's co-creating, you know, those quality moments. I'm not just high and by, but that I'm here, I hear you, you have a safe space. And letting people know that they are not alone, I think, is important.
Pastor Wesley?
Moving away from self-centeredness. Because I think the more awareness is raised and the more we talk about this, the more people will start to check it within their own lives and ask themselves, gosh, am I really connecting with my friends? Do I pick up on anything so that I could send a WhatsApp or a quick phone call and say, hey, you looked a bit down today when I saw you, or you seemed a bit distracted. Maybe we can have a coffee if you want to chat about anything. It's going to take you 2 minutes to do that. That's empathy. That's actually saying, I see you, I recognize you. And that moves us away from being self-centered.
Simone?
I'll speak to a workplace context because I think that it feels daunting. It feels time consuming being empathetic in a workplace. And so I think one of the aspects of empathy that I touched on earlier is curiosity. And so sometimes someone says something or they say something in an email and I feel internally there's like a bit of a friction. And I think, gosh, that's not okay. And often it's because I'm relying on my own biases. I'm relying on my own assumptions. I haven't really interrogated or explored and said, but what do you actually mean by that? You know, I'm just my assumptions and how I enter into the world is affecting how I understand that statement. And I think a lot of workplace conflict can be avoided by, in that moment, maybe it's just me, if you're feeling a bit prickly inside by something that you read in an email or someone said, and it has potential for ambiguity, you could really just say, but I'm curious, what did you mean by that? Let's take a moment to unpack that rather than just saying, oh, but I don't agree, because you haven't actually discussed whether your minds are meeting on the substance of the statement. And so I think not in all cases, you might just be dealing with an obnoxious person, but where there is ambiguity, take a moment and say, I'm curious, what did you mean by that? Or how did you come to believe that if it's someone with strong political views? Understand the why behind the statements that could cause that friction. I think we're in an increased, not I think, we are in an increasingly polarized world. And it's saying, actually, I'm going to take a moment before I cancel you. I want to hear and I sincerely want to listen to why you might have come to believe what you do. And I think that takes courage and it takes willing to sit in the discomfort, but it's crucial if we want a peaceful society going forward. The narrative that we're creating or the path that we're on doesn't bode well. When we're tired of someone, we can't just cut them out because it's going to end up into even more isolation and individualistic mindsets. And so we need to do the work of communicating with empathy, being curious, taking time, listening.
A big thank you to my guests for coming through and having a discussion with me about the topic of empathy. Empathy is the core value of the Heartlines project, What's Your Story? And you can find resources for it at whatsyourstory.org.za. And many of the things that we spoke about and covered, you can find in the resources at www.whatsyourstory.org.za. In a world that often feels divided, empathy has the power to bring us back together. It reminds us that behind every opinion and struggle, every joy is a human being with a story that is worth hearing. And when we take time to truly listen, we create space for healing, understanding, and more importantly, connection. And the best part of it doesn't take much to start. It starts with a simple question. What's your story? Thanks for joining us. That's all the time we have for today.
And that's it for today. We hope we've left you inspired as we learn and grow together. To continue this conversation and to connect with more values-based content, visit our website at www.heartlines.org.za. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at Heartlines ZA.